Accession number 2879, Real 9.
And it just went through all right. In fact, I think we left off one of the ribs in the midships, I think, and then or collapsed it.
Right.
This was the first time we went, and then carried it up through, and that was all right. And we just fixed the ribs up again, and then we went off.
And what
the,
equipment do you carry?
Off the hydroplane.
How much equipment do you?
Nothing much. It's just we had a belt on, revolver, no big weapons at all.
Uh-huh.
Just I had the old 4.57 revolver. You know, we kept to that one with a lanyard around the neck.
Right.
And that was all. I think we had our rubber boots on.
And the explosives, how's that carry?
No torches. Oh, we had no explosives in that case, in the first one. No.
Right.
But the explosive, of course, we had in our knapsacks.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the boat at all.
Wrapped in waterproof?
Wrapped in sacking. Well, not. No, the explosives were Lewis bombs we're talking about now.
Right.
Well, they were wrapped in sacking. And then wrapped in either blanket or cloth of some sort, I think, just to keep them together in the bag and something shaking around.
Uh-huh.
Because they had the time pencils attached, and very often, through no fault of our own at all, or just through wear and tear or something like that, one of the pencils would go off.
Right.
And that meant you had to unpack the bag, get at the smouldering one. We had 10 seconds to do that. That's all they had on the safety fuse.
10 seconds to get in the bag.
The time pencil was attached to the end of the safety fuse. The safety fuse had 10 seconds.
That's too ridiculous.
I think that.
So then, so you.
That was the reason. But
you get
the time pencil itself was a delayed action, usually up to about hour and a half or 2 hours, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So that was safe enough. But as I say, the copper wire inside the time pencil, which was, wait a minute, what was it now? Surrounded by acid.
Right.
That would sometimes go too soon or something like that, or even just break. But it used to take from, I think it was 20 minutes, or half an hour, that's all, to up to 3 hours.
Right.
At the time pencil itself, for that acid to eat through. So it must be something to do with the strength of the copper wire itself, which held the firing pin back, or else it was to do with the acid itself, not quite so strong, I don't know, but I don't know how they worked it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the strength of the copper wire that held the striker back.
Yeah, and how long it would take to eat through it.
Eat through. Mm-hmm.
Right.
My manager was pretty dodgy at times. In fact, a couple of the SAS men, they were driving along one day, and they heard that. Well, they were always expecting it. I wasn't with them then, but one of them said then, there was all of a sudden there was this crack, and before anyone could say anything, they'd all jumped out of the jeep. Two of them got back to the bomb bag, you know, and got that out and stopped it, you know, but it was a near thing, you know, otherwise it would have gone on.
Dear me.
But they were just minor little things all the time, you know, that happened.
Were they?
And it added to the excitement, you know. But we never had any trouble, not on the submarine or anywhere else with them. We looked after the bomb from where they were.
Mm.
Especially when we went to a Rommel thing, we never used them then because as I was coming to it now, I was on the Talisman.
Mm.
I was on the bomb squad, and you'll read different versions about it there, but the correct one I think you'll find was the Talisman's captain in his report, you know.
Mm.
He said that both submarines, the Thorn and the Talisman, were creeping into the beach. And there was a bit of a swell up, and they were undecided what to do. Because all the troops there were about 40 of them, I think, on the Thorn.
Mm.
And there was about 20 of us on the Talisman, because we were going to a different place, you see.
Right.
And the technique there was to gradually ease the nose in until it touched bottom, and then gradually adjust with the, because they couldn't blow tanks or anything, it's too noisy, you see. And gradually adjust. Until they just by backing off until the submarine, the deck was nearly awash, that is, you know, so they could float the Kali floats off.
Right.
And land the troops. Well, Thorn got away all right, and the Talisman, as it was coming in, whether it backed off too swiftly or whether it was a sudden swell came up, but it came straight over the deck, washed the Kali float off, washed the foam boat off. About six of the troops were drowned immediately.
Oh.
Whereas the sailors, they saw what was happening anyway. They got down onto the ballast tanks, and they saved at least four or five of them there. Well, we dragged two up. I dragged my own mate up, Corporal Pearson. He was in the water floundering. Luckily, we weren't so heavily dressed, but the others had their big arm rifles or Tommy guns and pack and everything the last three or four days, you see.
Right.
So we decided not to land any of us after that. We backed off. Talisman backed off, and we stayed off and waited for the results and see what would happen.
Right.
But we couldn't stay too long because Talisman had to get back to Alexandria, so they went back, and the Thorn just stayed by. And then the two other boatmen, Corporal Feebrey and Stuart, I think, they stayed behind, and they helped out with the reconnaissance of the beach afterwards. But of course, the troops didn't get back from them. Well, some of them got back from the Rumble's headquarters, or supposed to have been.
Yeah.
The leader had been killed, of course. He got the VC for it. But another good officer was shot on the way, escaping, and he was caught. And of course, there were a lot of Arab troops there as well, pretty ruthless they are, you know.
Yeah.
And they attacked troops on the beach. But they managed to hold off for a while, and the Thorn could see their signals. But when Feebrey went in the foal boat to investigate, the beach was clear, they'd gone, so they'd all been taken.
Mm-hmm.
Only two got away from that, on land, that is, and that was Laycock and his sergeant. I forget his name now, but too many of them.
Right.
They nearly died on the way back through the desert by eating raw onions, and it was garlic, and it was poisonous or something. The Arabs saved them, but there again, that's off the rocks.
Yeah.
But training for the Rumble raid was that I was taken from Cabrit up to Alexandria, where they were going to take off from.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go with this Scottish unit, the 11th Commando. That's where I got that letter from. I wrote from there one time.
Mm-hmm.
And we started training with them. That was one of the friends of the Scotsman there, and we had a fine time there training, you know.
Right, in Alexandria.
Taking bombs up, and there was a big sort of a wall in one place there on the training ground, and we had to go up with the bomb, put the bomb down, press it, and then come back and retreat. Well, I went one side with a mate, and another fellow went the other side with a mate. Well, to strike the safety fuse, you put the match on the end of the safety fuse and then strike that, and of course the heat lit up the safety fuse straight away. No time pencil, so you had to be immediate. 10 seconds again.
Right.
So my match wouldn't go. And the other fellow was just beginning to say, let's just get out. I said, no, just duck your head. No, that was only a bomb that size, you see.
Right.
Terrific bang, but I mean, it wouldn't hurt you if it was down. And I'd been to Brook and knew all about that. So we just laid low, let that one go off with a wallop. And then I got up again, struck again. This time it went off. And we just jumped back. That was it.
Right.
And as I say, it's just those minor things in the training. Walking was the worst, marching, because I had short legs and was always dragging behind, you know, but
right.
We managed to keep up eventually, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that was the training.
Right.
Two of them I met again in the prison camp eventually, from the Rumble raid.
Uh-huh. Of course.
So that's why I got mixed up with the Talisman, in that sense. We were going to a place called Apollonia, radio station there, but I said we never got there. Had it all ready, you know, it's frustrating not being able to learn. So Sutherland was the same. And
how many of you went on that one for the radio station, Apollonia?
There were only six of us going on there, and another lot were going a little bit further down. There were only about 14 or 15...
Does that make the submarine reduce crew to accommodate you, or?
Oh yes, well it was a bit crowded down there, but we were all lined up along the passage and everything else. It was only about a few hours from Alexandria. It didn't take all that long getting up there.
Right.
In fact, it wasn't Alexandria. It was Merton Matru. We met them up there. We went up by lorries to there. They took off from there, so it wasn't all that long.
Mm-hmm.
But Gamp Myers, of course, he was one of the most famous submarine commanders of the world of the last war.
Right.
At the VC a couple of times, but even he survived. But
Well, he was the commander on the Talisman.
He was commander. He stayed with the Talisman all that time.
Right.
Did some marvellous thing with the Talisman in different places.
Did he survive the war?
He survived there, yeah. But he was... He was called Gant Meyer for something to do with the umbrella. He always had an umbrella with him when he's on shore.
Right.
For some reason, that sunshade or something, yeah.
How did command work between the SBS commander and the submarine commander?
Well, we took all our orders from the submarine commander himself. Passed down through number one, that is, Jimmy, you know.
Right.
They passed orders down, exactly what had to be done. But then we told them our instructions, that, what to do and what ammunition we had and what weapons we had and what exploded and things like that.
Yeah.
That all had to go down below in the ammunition locker to start with. But that was later on the Adriatic, on the Italian coast, that was. But then, I don't know what to remember there, but that's how we always went, though, from our own commander, Captain Keeley, the SBS. He would give us instructions about various, in case of Yugoslavia, for example, there.
Yeah.
If he saw any likely targets there, he pressed the captain. If the captain thought it would be all right, okay, but his priority was the submarine, because we couldn't do anything that would jeopardise the submarine.
Yeah, of course.
That's why when I was in the water, I couldn't shout out. Nothing like that, because that would jeopardise.
You can't jeopardise the submarine.
Yeah.
So is it quite risky, when the submarine came in, you get the canoe up on the deck you put it on the diving planes?
That wasn't all that bad at all, really. I mean, the casing party did all that. That was Magnus was in charge of it on the Thorn.
Right.
This particular one. The casing party would help us out with the canoe. They'd get it down onto the hydroplane, the forward hydroplane.
Mm-hmm.
And the hydroplane was just above the water, isn't it?
Right.
The submarine trimmed down.
Yes.
And then we'd load in, and if we were landing anybody, like this newspaper correspondent and this Polish officer,
yeah,
we'd get them one at a time. I took the, in this case, I took the reporter and Corporal Castro the other one. But first of all, the stuff was packed in, their gear was packed in the front of the canoe and in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got the passenger in first and then got in ourselves. It was all fairly straightforward with a calm sea, you know.
Right.
But the point is, it wasn't a calm. In this case, not the second time. The first time I went to Milliet Island. You know Milliet, is it? Milliet, the big long island just off Dubrovnik, is it?
Right. Yeah, I don't know the island, but I can picture. I know that coastline.
It's,
I know
it's
the
long,
the
long island going across the Adriatic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Milliet, M-I-L-J-T.
Right.
I think it was.
Right.
We did two landings there. That first one was all right, but we couldn't find a.
What was your job on those islands?
Just to landing. There was nothing. There's nothing to hit.
Right.
The submarine did all the damage on that ship, I think. on this particular one, Milliet, we couldn't find anywhere to in the shape of a beach at all. There was no beach. There's a beach on the map there. It looked like a beach, but there was no beach or anything. It was just rock and about 5 feet of water.
Uh-huh.
So eventually we had to. We had to get out and find a depth and pull the submarine, pull the boat in for them. You know.
Right.
But that was an unexpected meeting there.
Mm-hmm.
We knew we were going to meet friends, or at least we thought we would. You know, so that was all right.
So where did you sail from for that one on Milliet?
On the.
It was on the Thorn.
On Milliet.
But where did you come from, Alexandria?
Yeah, from Alexandria. Yeah.
So how long had that taken?
Well, it took. Round about 2 to 3 weeks altogether, the roundabout, because we went on various places out into the Adriatic to charge up batteries, because it was difficult to go at night in among the islands, you know.
Yeah. So
the captain had his orders, I suppose, of where he had to go, you know.
2 to 3 weeks, that's quite a long time.
See, that's why I mentioned in here that on the. At times they're quite boring, you know.
Yeah.
And then another time of excitement too is when what do they call them again now? What's the junior officer called now? Before he takes over as junior, as a lieutenant.
Subaltern. A cadet naval officer.
Yeah, the junior naval officer, the learners.
Ensigns? No. I don't know. I don't know naval.
I remember now. Anyway, they're like a junior officer. They're not strictly officers, but just training the officers.
Right.
And they were training anyway. And sometimes during the long trip up there, they do all sorts of training, like trimming the submarine, mm-hmm. surfacing the submarine, and things like that. Mm-hmm. At night, that is, or even in daytime as well. And they have to be in charge of the control room and giving orders to the
planesmen and the
hydroplane operators. So yeah. They were the important ones. And then there's the ballast tank operators who control the air pressure as well, mm-hmm. and they give orders to those. And then they had to watch the trim of the ship as well. And some occasion they slipped off a bit with the instructions and timing one with the other, you know, the air pressure and hydroplane. Yeah. And you know, on this occasion, the submarine started to go backwards, slide down.
Right.
For a while, it got out of control. But the first lieutenant there just shouted out for the captain, and he took over himself. And the captain came out, had a look, or commander rather,
mm-hmm.
and everything was all right after a while. You know, he steadied things up. But
was he calm about it?
That's what I meant the other day when I said that the submariners would come around and explain everything if anything went wrong or anything was going wrong or any if there was some sort of doubt about what was going on, they'd come and tell you. And they'd say, "Oh, it's only this and that and this and that." And then they said that in this case here, The trainee got it mixed up a bit, and we started to go backwards. So it could have been dangerous. various things.
Did he get attacked by aircraft at all?
No, not once. We sighted the aircraft, but not once. But going through the Strait of Otranto, it was submerged there, and every now and again, the Italian Navy would come along and drop depth charges there at random.
Right.
They couldn't always detect us, you know, but in fact, they didn't even know we were there sometimes. But they would drop depth charges at sort of regular intervals, rather like they did to Brooklyn and shelling at regular at different intervals, you know. Mm. Just we need their feelings, I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
But we never, on that trip, we weren't really depth charged at all.
So you went straight from Alexander to Mariette, and you.
Yeah, straight to. Up through the Straits of Otranto, into the Adriatic, and up to Mariette, and that was the first landing there we did.
Did anyone go ashore first to check?
No, that's what our job. That's our job was that. We went ashore, but I forgot. Oh, I mentioned that last time.
Yeah, and then you
One of us would go ashore to check up. I went ashore and just checked up to see if everything was all right.
No, were you the senior? You and Corporal?
Yeah, Corporal Cass, yeah.
So you're in command?
Well, more or less if it came to that, but there wouldn't be.
It wasn't like that.
But in any case, with the SBS and the SAS, we were all equal, so to speak. You know?
Right.
But if it was a case of protocol and things like that, well, we'd have to do it on parade and things like that.
But you'd taken a look through the periscope and then you'd taken a decision
we'd seen the beach.
To go ahead.
There was no beach. It looked like a beach, but there was no beach, actually. But anyway, we got off of that. And then I met up with these Yugoslavs. And one of them said, well, in English to start with, hello, hello, hello. And I just identified myself, you know, I just said,
in Italian?
Who was it? Yeah, in Italian this time, because they didn't understand a lot of English. And of course, the women were gabbling away there as well.
So there's quite a group of them, wasn't there?
And this we were lucky with them, because those particular partisans were all right, you know, they were.
Right.
I don't know why they were being dropped there anyway. It was a Yugoslav officer being dropped off there, and the names are in the.
Were they communist partisans?
Where were they? No. Oh, the admiral, he gave the names of who the officers were. Remember in that letter?
Yeah.
He gave the names of who they were. And it's Petrarch, it was. Petrarch on Milek. He couldn't find it on the map.
Oh.
I remember the name, you know. That was the first lot, and the second lot was touch and go. Nobody's going to meet them. They were going to be landed more or less secretly, you know, with nobody else knowing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they got into trouble. the Thrall first that came out, and reporter, he got tangled up and more or less stamped on the canoe as it went out, you know, because it's all, you had to get ashore as quick as possible, and he was loaded down himself. And the main thing was saving the canoe so you can get the gear out as well. He had all sorts of gear, and his corporal radio operator, he had to get out as well with all his radio equipment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in those days, it wasn't just a little portable radio, it was what they called 18 sets, they're about that size.
Right. Quite heavy as well.
Oh, heavy as well, yeah. I know that, they had to carry one at times.
So they got ashore all right, didn't they?
Well, they got through, but we landed them all right. The canoe was damaged. But Cass came back. Cass had already been in, and he was on his way back. And because I was delayed because of the canoe was broken up a bit, and I was trying to get it steadied. And Cass came back.
Mm-hmm.
And he helped get me back to the submarine.
Right.
Well, then we got his canoe on, and was just getting mine on, and it slipped off again. No, Cass got mine on, and Cass's canoe slipped off. So I said, well, I'm wet already, I'll go and get it, I'll pop in and get it, see? So I just dived in, I thought everything was all right. Instead of that, by the time I got to the canoe, and tried to damage it, to sink it, but it wouldn't sink, you know. So then I started dragging it. And then, of course, I was exhausted. The pistol came off, out of the holster, and was hanging around my neck like an anchor. That didn't help much.
You hadn't thought to take it off and leave it on the submarine?
No, it's all the time, you know. I don't think of those times, being young and rash and everything else. But I let go of the canoe because I was exhausted. And I started to swing back, and then I started to think. I went down and I came up again, but I kept saying as quiet as possible, I'm sinking. And the rest of the crew afterwards said, the party said, they thought I said the canoe was sinking. But Magnus had sharper ears than the others, I suppose. He must have heard properly, you see, because the next thing I know, this head popped up beside me and he had hold of me, and that was all right. But, so this was a good job by him, wasn't it?
It's quite a job to pull someone onto a casing, isn't it?
Pardon?
Is it quite hard to pull someone up onto a casing as well?
Oh, yes, well, it is. If you're soaking wet as well, you know.
Mm.
There's only room for one on the casing and for helping out, you know, that sort of thing, one at a time.
Yeah.
And it's only about that, about as wide from here to the casing. I'm talking about the hydroplane.
Yeah.
The casing's up to about, they're quite narrow, you know, but the hydroplane is about as wide as that, wide as the fireplace and up to about us, that's all.
Was that all?
They have to go up and down like that.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's on an aeroplane.
Yeah,
it's like
an aeroplane,
yeah.
Oh.
God.
So that's the end of that one, but,
So they got you back up and took you down in the warm, did they?
Oh, yes, I ended up with the captain was furious when we first went down. You know, I went down to report to him and just said everyone's landed okay and everything else. And he was furious about the delay, you know. He was cursing, not at us strictly, but he was cursing in general, you know, about everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought, well, it's best not to say anymore. Off we went. But we were loaded down, we undressed. They gave us these white pullovers that they wear, you know, mm-hmm. They did in those days. We were soon quite warm, I mean, we were young and soon got over that. And then the captain called us in and he apologised then, you know, he just said, I've heard all the details now, he said, so, you know what it was, and that was that.
Right. And what did you do after you dropped the belts, you went back to Alexandra, did you?
Yeah, I went straight back to Alex then. And then as soon as I got to the Medway, I had a message from Sutherland to say that I was now part of the SAS and the report to Cabrit immediately.
Right.
And that was the SAS had already left for that raid, those raids, up on in the desert with their cars. And he stayed behind there with he said he was going up with Stirling, so when I arrived there, all I had time was to unpack or pack up a few things, get dressed for the desert. And we were loaded onto this Bristol Bombay and off we went. It was a shaky old aircraft, too.
But with the Sorry, stay with the SBS for a minute. Mm-hmm. Well, when you did a railway line, did you try to do it inside a tunnel? Was that the advice you were given, if you could? You did one inside a tunnel,
I think. Well, we didn't do any in the tunnel. We just either buried it under the sleeper,
right,
and then brought up the wires around and just camouflaged it that way. But most of it was a bit hurried at times, you know.
Would you wait for a train or just blow the train?
We were doubtful, but well, the thing is, the commander, the submarine commander, if he thought so, in this case it was a Thorn, he would study the railway for a while and see what was going on, the difference between troop trains and things like that, you see.
Right.
And if it was a troop train, if he thought it was a freight train, he didn't bother about so much about passenger train, because the Italians are still travelling, you see.
Mm-hmm.
It was mostly freight and troops. So we do it then. But twice we laid one. The one near... hang on, I'll get it in a minute. So. Porto... Civitanova. Civitanova, that was one place. And another one up towards Rimini. Yeah, we went to Rimini.
I got the boat there from Split. Yeah. So you can get I got the boat from Split.
It was just below Rimini, though, isn't it? But all that way down there, the railway runs down the coast, you see.
Right.
And in this particular case, it runs along the beach, rather like the Torbay, Tynemouth.
Like a double track main line.
So it's a lot easier, you know. And we can watch the beach. We went down past the place where we laid one lot. It went off, but we don't know really what happened at all, but whether it was derailed or what.
Right.
Because quite a while afterwards, you know. Anyway, as we went by in the train there, Nellie and I, down to see Shamba, they could see the railway all the way down there, looking out across the Adriatic as well. Surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, and the huge shadow up there under...
Yeah.
Submerged.
That was.
So you did two of those on railway lines?
Two of those, yes. Another one in Sicily. As I said, I was telling you, I went up on the Porpoise. Mm. Me and Captain Sutherland then, yeah, of course.
You and Sutherland on the Porpoise?
He had to go up and report. There was another branch of the SBS in Malta as well, you see.
Ah.
That was... he was the one that got the VC in it. He got killed in Camacho. Remember the name again? Lassen,
Dane.
The Dane, yeah, he was.
Lassen.
He'd formed the boat section there, we're training them there. We didn't see him, they were on Goza. But we went to the Porpoise, and we went to, went up on the Porpoise, which unloaded oil and things like that. Then we went into the Truant, transferred to the Truant, which was going to patrol all Sicily, southern coast and east coast of Sicily there. And we didn't do much there, we landed in a couple of places there just to look at beaches and things like that. And that's where they landed afterwards eventually. But
we did beach surveys or?
Well, beaches were alright, you know. There was. Did you say where they were?
That you were there, you did beach surveys, did you?
Yeah, not strictly, and it was done eventually, you know, not with. Samples of
sand. There's to take sand samples, isn't there? So the tanks
checking the depth and things like that.
Yeah.
And the depth at certain tides and what, nothing like that. Just whether it was suitable for tanks and just the type of beach it was. You know, we just giving instructions. That was all. But I remember mostly there though, off Sicily, was that at night when we were charging up batteries going up the coast, the terrific smell of walnuts. The
walnut.
I don't know if you know the walnut is in a green shell, isn't it, when it's growing.
I don't know, is it though?
It grows in a green shell like a chestnut.
Oh.
And the green shell itself has a lovely aroma of it, very piquant, you know.
Mm.
And you can smell that at night. As well as the bay, you can smell the bay trees and various other country smells. Marvellous smell it was.
Mm-hmm.
The sailors called it something, aren't they? Something to do with the land scent or something, but I forget what they call it now. But after being cooped up in the submarine, you know, all day, and coming up on deck and smelling that, it's a marvellous one. But we felt like most in the Dodecanese Islands around there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think most of the time we were enjoying various other things apart from the action and things, you know.
Yeah.
The other things kicked in. There was the water, for example, in one area. There the water was actually warm. Well, you know, not just warm normally, but warm to the hand and the touch. That was